Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, guest host Randeep Janda in today and for the rest of the week here. Filling in for Thomas Drance on Canucks Talk. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Open segment here, so send your texts in. We were talking the NHL coaching landscape, how it might inform Rick Tocchet's decision, impending decision in his future. So send your texts in on that. But also wanted to mention Elias Pettersson's agent, one of his agents, JP Barry, was on with our friends Donnie and Dolly earlier today. And of course, a lot of conversation about Elias Pettersson's season. What are his plans for the summer, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing groundbreaking. I mean, it's the agent, right? So his job is to protect the player. And what JP Barry said was, look, he's got a big plan, you know, doesn't have the same injuries in front of him that he had last year. So he can get started right away. Going to stay for a while in Vancouver training with people, but has good people lined up in Sweden as well. And he just wants to execute and have a bigger summer. Also said he wasn't surprised or offended or anything by either the criticism of Pettersson from Rutherford and Elvin or the suggestion that they'd keep their options open and potentially entertain trade scenarios for the player. So that's from JP Barry. And, you know, thinking about Elias Pettersson, I don't want to do a whole segment on Elias Pettersson here because we've done that. We've all done that. We've all done that a lot this year, Randy. But it does just strike me.
I listen.
It does just strike me like how much uncertainty there is with this player. And that's not a groundbreaking thing to say. But when you really think about it, I mean, if Elias Pettersson is the 100-point version of Elias Pettersson again, and you have this Norris-caliber version of Quinn Hughes, I look at a lot of these playoff teams, and I think, yeah, Canucks can go toe-to-toe with that. If he's more of a third-line center, Elias Pettersson, which is pretty much what we saw this year, then you're probably hooped. So the range of outcomes is massive. And the thing I'm struck at looking at this Canucks team is just how much uncertainty there is even beyond Elias Pettersson. And we can talk about the coaching situation and Quinn Hughes' future, but I even mean just like at forward, right? Like Elias Pettersson, uncertainty. Filip Hedl, uncertainty. Brock Besser and Pugh Suter, maybe certainty that they're leaving, but that creates uncertainty about who's going to replace them and who's going to fill in those positions as well. So I was trying to think about this and not necessarily spin it into a positive, but just the kind of, okay, follow-up question. Okay, there's all this uncertainty for the team in general, but especially up front, because I think we look at the defense corps like, okay, there's some certainty there.
Yeah.
Goalie, maybe, depending on Thatcher Demko, but there's some certainty there. But up front, what can you count on at forward? Like, what are the pieces you look at and say, you know what? I look at this guy or these guys and say, I know what I'm going to get from them. I can feel pretty confident penciling in whatever the production is, whatever the performance is from these players. Who are the pieces up front that you have certainty in for the Canucks next season?
Ultimately, when the president of a hockey operation says that they need to add two or three players in your top six, you kind of get a sense of you need some pieces.
Unsettled. It's in flux.
Not the most consistent play, but there are some players that I think are a part of the equation, right?
Okay.
And when you're talking about the top six, it has to start with Jake DeBrusque.
Yeah.
You set a career high in goals. You didn't have one center you played with. You basically played on a rotation with three or four of them all season long. I kind of know what I'm going to expect from Jake DeBrusque. He's a guy that's going to score in the slot. And if this team plays a certain style, if they're able to attack with a little bit more speed, they have puck carriers. He's not going to be the one carrying the puck. But can he play a complementary role in, you know, off the rush? He can.
Yes.
He did that in Boston. So
and I thought it was interesting. He himself said, like,
yeah,
I scored a career high in goals, but like the one of the ways I've traditionally scored goals in the NHL completely dropped off. And I need to get back to that, which is him scoring off the rush.
Exactly. And he dominated that inner slot, right? Like when he was scoring goals on the power play, which half of his goals were that, he's going to bring that. Now, if you add that extra wrinkle, you need him to get the puck from somebody. And I go back to a December 1st game against the Detroit Red Wings. He had a hat trick in that game. And the overtime goal in that game, you have a little bit more room to play with, of course, in overtime. But who punctured the center of Detroit's defense? It was Elias Pettersson carrying the puck across the blue line and then just peeling off a little bit to Jake DeBrusque, who ended up doing a wrister off the post and in. Like, he needs that in order to be a threat off
the rush. He needs someone to set him up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's only one Quinn Hughes right now on this team. So I think with Jake DeBrusk, there is a level of certainty of if you put him in positions to succeed, he's going to get it done.
Yeah, and I think even this year, the conversation around Jake DeBrusk was just like, he was exactly what you'd think you were getting when you got Jake DeBrusk, right? Like, there was no collapse. There was no, oh, found a new level. It was just, yeah, that's Jake DeBrusk. He had a Jake DeBrusk season, and I don't think there's any reason to think that's going to change next year. I mean, there's always fluctuations, but like, yeah, okay, we know who Jake DeBrusk is as a player. We have a very good idea, depending on who he's playing with at center. You have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get from him as well. Do you put Connor Garland in this category too? As a guy you can kind of bank on what a certain level of production, a certain level of performance.
I think the effort is always going to be there with Connor Garland, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to question the effort. His engine is always going. His motor is always going. His production is something that I think can really uptick. Or sometimes it feels like he's fighting the puck out there a little bit. But there's certain stretches of the season. Maybe, I want to say about two-thirds in, he kind of fell a little bit. But throughout the entire season, especially the first half of the season, behind Hughes and Lankinen, he was the third piece on this team that was driving them.
Yeah.
So I think with Connor Garland, it's a matter of where does he fit? Ideally, it's probably a third line.
Yeah.
Where you've got some pieces that are above him that are taking the bigger matchups, and he could potentially on a third line, whether it's soft matchups, whether it's head-to-head matchups, he's on a line with hopefully Teddy Bluger and Dakota Joshua, and they can play that style of game. But as far as consistency is concerned, he's going to bring that effort wherever he plays. I just think that fit right now in the third line is where you need to build that roster to get him into that spot where he's given you probably 40 to 45 points, but they're high-impact minutes.
And I think you love Connor Garland as the offensive driver on a third line. Like, that's a perfect role for him. And even now with the cap going up, it's like salary. Okay, that's fine. That's a totally fine salary for that position. And you're right. If he's in that role, you know exactly what you're going to get. Some diminishing returns, I think, when he moves up the lineup. I still think you could use him in the right fit in a top six role, like with the right pieces around him. But ideally, yeah, as you say, you're insulating him. You're bringing in the pieces to push him down the lineup a little bit.
Well, one thing about Connor Garland playing up the lineup is that, you know, sometimes he's the spark plug that requires other guys to get going. Elias Pettersson.
Right.
But the reason
that
he
hasn't
shines.
Worked.
But that's my point, though. The reason he shines is because the other guys are not shining.
Yeah.
So it's you're trying to get them going. He's going to bring his effort, but it hasn't worked. So it's in a way, it's a desperation move.
Yeah. So that's the thing. You want to find just the guys that work up the lineup and then just lock him into that third line soft matchup role where he can really exploit the other team. And we've seen what he can do there. Okay. DeBrusk, Garland, guys we feel pretty good about, pretty certain in. Is there anyone else? You would say like a high degree of certainty up front?
I think. And I'm not talking about the top six here, but I think Kiefer Sherwood is definitely a part of that conversation where you can insert him definitely on the third or fourth line and you know what you're getting.
Yeah. And Kiefer Sherwood, I think you're totally right to throw him in this mix. I wouldn't bet on him necessarily to score 19 goals again, but just what you're getting on a shift-to-shift basis, right? He's going to go out there. He brings speed, brings that work ethic, the hits, obviously, loves to shoot. And, you know, we'll see. Like, does his shooting percentage go back down a little bit next year and he scores, you know, 14 goals instead? Totally possible. But it's not going to be because he dropped off as a player. It's just going to be a puck luck thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, his performance, his process, I think, is very much locked in. And then sometimes you get the break, sometimes you don't.
You know what I love about Kiefer Sherwood is that when he's on the ice, he's never happy. Like, even he gets a chance, a grade A chance, and there's always like a scowl on his face. He's always shaking his head. He's ticked off about something. And that speaks to his want of like doing more and getting more out of his effort, which that's a mentality that tells you wherever he plays in the lineup, he's going to bring it. To your point, it may not be production. It might be an aggressive forecheck, something that this team really lacked this year, playing connected through the neutral zone. Like, those effort questions, Kiefer Sherwood is never going to fail at those. If anything, you might have to pull them back a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, just like when you're drawing up your lineup card, okay, boom, plug him in third line. No problem.
We know no questions.
No
asked.
Questions. No, like, does he fit this role or whatever? Boom. You have a clear cut role that you know he can live up to. And the production might fluctuate a little bit, but whatever, because you like what you're getting otherwise from Kiefer Sherwood. So I think certainty in Kiefer Sherwood, I think, is very fair.
Consistency is there. Now, the question is there anybody left on that roster that you can say 100% certain with their effort and what they bring, and they're going to fit in here?
Teddy Bluger?
Yeah.
Again, right role.
Yep.
But like, if Teddy Bluger's your fourth line center, you're like, okay, boom, we're getting professional veteran fourth line center minutes from Teddy Bluger, and he's going to help us on our penalty kill.
Yeah, like,
right?
Basically, I'm trying to put this kindly, but like, you know, you know, like your comfort foods that are not going to win any Michelin star ratings at your local restaurant.
Sure.
Like a good PB&J gets the job done.
It's like your box of mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese, like. Yeah. And that's the, like, they get the job done. They're not going to win.
Sometimes you just need calories. It's like, I don't care what they taste like.
PB&J's got some sugar. You know, the sugar levels are not low. Yeah. The peanut butter gives you some protein. Like, Teddy Bluger, and I say this respectfully, is like, he's the guy that just gets the job done. You're not going to get the goal of the year from him.
Yeah.
You're going to have some great moments, but you're never going to lose because of Teddy Bluger. You're never going to be like, oh, he made that defensive mistake.
Right.
Oh, that face-off he lost. Like, he's always generally in the positive.
Now, I do think and I know in their division winning season, when it was a lot of Bluger, Joshua, Garland, and that line was obviously very successful, but then you also saw they had that success with Pugh Suter, they had that success with Elias Lindholm. Like, I think even third line is pushing it a little bit for Bluger. You know what I mean? Like, ideally, you would like to have him slotted into the fourth line. So, with their center depth, is that going to be possible? We'll see, right? Can they add someone else to push him down to the fourth line role? But if he is, you know exactly what you're getting from Teddy Bluger. There's no mystery there. There's not a lot of upside, but I don't think there's a ton of downside.
No, he's a neutralizer,
either.
Right? Like, yeah. I don't know if it's a Jason Statham movie or something, the neutralizer, but like Teddy Bluger is that. He's not going to give you the biggest plus, but he's not giving you a negative.
He's definitely the opposite. What was the one where he had to like jumpstart his heart? Or was that Crank? Is that it?
He's not that.
He's not that. No, he's the opposite of that.
Just steady. Even keel.
Yeah. Doesn't make for a great movie.
I didn't watch that movie.
I have not seen it either.
Had me with the blue and cream, so, but not this.
We're certain on DeBrusk, Garland, Sherwood, Bluger. Those are the four guys we're like, okay, pencil them in for a certain level of production. Is there anyone else? Like, I don't think there's anyone else in that tier. I think every other forward has differing degrees of question marks. Now, this person texts in, Dakota Joshua will be better next season. I totally agree that Dakota Joshua will be better. Totally agree. I still don't think you can put him in as like, oh, he's a lock to do X, right? Like, I think there's still some question marks around exactly what you're going to get from Dakota Joshua.
I think one thing to be clear with Dakota is even heading into this year, right? Obviously, we know about the cancer diagnosis, the injuries that happened. But before we found out about all of that, there was still a question of, is he capable of following up that contract?
Yes.
I think that was the original question. And this year, we couldn't answer that question.
And I think the other thing to point out here is uncertainty doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. Because you could partly look at the uncertainty with Joshua and say, like, is there another level?
Sure.
Is there another level for him where he, you know, hey, net front on the power play, right? Or, hey, we think he's good enough to hold down a top six role for us, right? Like, that still exists in the list of potential outcomes for Dakota Joshua.
Well, the issue with him this year was his timing. He was always about a second or a half a second off. And Rick Tocchet mentioned that as well. If you can get up to speed, if you have a full training camp, if you put in your post, your off-season workout, and you come back and you have that half a second, then you can play with the big boys.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're not being thrown on a top line where you're always a half a step back. And I'm not even talking about offensively. I'm talking about the forecheck. Like, he wasn't getting home enough this season, right? The neutral zone play, which he is so good at when he's going, it wasn't there. I think he's not in that tier one of most certainty that we were talking about. I think he's just off of that. But it's kind of unfair to him as well because he didn't have a normal season. So I'm willing to see.
It's not a criticism. He might be in this group next year.
Right?
It's just like there's some upside there, and there's also some potential downside. Like you don't feel as confident in him as you do in the other guys.
No, but you get a training.
Or certain, I should say. You might feel confident that you're going to get a bounce back, but there's a bigger range of outcomes.
But if you get a proper training camp and he hits the ground running in September, then all of a sudden he could be a part of that group.
Absolutely, he absolutely could. Anyone else? Like Drew O'Connor? I mean, I just feel like we're still waiting to see what the fit is for him in Vancouver.
Okay, so his career numbers usually are, I think his career high was 33 points.
Yeah.
Like,
10 goals this year in 84 games, which is incredible.
Can you see him getting, like, being a 30-point player for the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah.
Over a full season, consistency, playing with hopefully the same teammates and getting some chemistry there? Like, I think so. As a third line player, a guy that's aggressive on the forecheck, to me, he's 25, 30 point guy.
Yeah.
Like the ceiling is not the highest.
Yeah.
But the floor is.
It's hard for me to put him in like the high certainty category when we've only seen what, 31 games from him as a Vancouver Canuck, and they were such like unsettled games. You know what I mean? So it's like, well, what's his role? Who's he playing with? Does he have chemistry with anyone? You know, it's not a, I'm not necessarily skeptical of the player. I like a lot of what he can do. It's just like, okay, what does it look like for a full season of Drew O'Connor in Vancouver?
His role is going to be, you know, crash and bang on the forecheck, but also at the same time playing with speed through the neutral zone. Yes. Now, here's the question. Who is he playing with down the middle?
Who can he do that with?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the big question.
Because notably, the only center we've listed and guys we have certainty in is Teddy Bluger, who we both agree is best suited as your fourth line center, right? And obviously, Elias Pettersson, we all know the questions there. Pugh Suter, number one question is he going to be back? But even if he is back, you feel great about him and locked in as your second line center? Probably not. Philip Hedl, questions around health and questions around production and what he's doing when he's actually healthy.
Ratu is part of probably that
Ratu,
part of that
Ratu you throw in there. Like, can he step up and be a full-time center at the NHL level? And so, not breaking news, obviously, that like, hey, there's a lot of questions down the middle and they need to go get somebody. I do find it fascinating to think about all of the uncertainty that we're laying out here. And now you're going out and you're targeting a center to bring in and improve your team. Well, the guys that are available typically, if you're looking for a center 27 and under who you think has top six upside at the very least, if not first line upside, those guys are only available if there's major questions about them. If there's significant questions or at least significant risk. Like, think about like a Dylan Cousins who got moved for Josh Norris, right? Like, big questions on both sides. You go back to Jack Eichel. That's a very high end version, but major question about his health.
Pierre-Luc Dubois.
That's a great one, right? So you're already dealing with a situation where you have a ton of uncertainty up front. If you're going out and making that trade for a center, you're probably adding more, but I don't think you can shy away from it. Like, the way you get the highest upside is by taking on more risk. And I think you almost have to say, you know what? Yeah, we got a lot of risk on our team as well, but we might have to add more. Like, if that gives us the path to adding the superstar, a superstar player, okay, there's all these question marks about them. You kind of just have to bite the bullet and do it and take on that risk.
Teams aren't dealing bona fide superstars, as far as I know anyways. We haven't heard those reports.
No, if you're like locked in, if you're on your team's version of the certainty list and you're a high-end player, you don't get traded.
No, you don't.
That's not how it works.
You don't. And I, you know, there's been conversations, Canucks fans talking, but I was asked this morning by Alfred and Bruff about Dylan Larkin. I can understand why Steve Yzerman would want to maybe explore that conversation just to see what the market is asking. But is that a diminished asset?
Not really.
No. Right? Like, you really got to that. I don't understand why Detroit would make
I'd also say full no trade for Dylan Larkin.
Exactly.
I do think there's like conceptually an interesting, if the Canucks decided they wanted to move on from Pettersson, could you pitch Pettersson to Steve Yzerman as he's like desperate to take a swing at high end talent?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, could he be a
younger
into that
player? So you're saying, hey, we can fix this guy.
But Dylan Larkin is a full no trade. So.
And most guys do. At least, you know, they have half the league on their no trade.
If you've hit your UFA years, you probably have that no trade protection if you're a high end player.
So going back to your original point.
Yeah,
you're not going to be getting a bona fide superstar. You're going to be getting somebody that has questions coming back. And I think that's what this next season is going to be for the Vancouver Canucks, right? You're going to have to bank on some players to probably restore their value, both internally and externally. And, you know, even a player like, I look at one player that I like in Buffalo, J.J. Paterka. Fast, 60-point player. There was some rumblings around the trade deadline. He's not a center, but he's a speedy winger. There's also rumblings of like, hey, man, maybe Buffalo is just, the stench has gotten too much and players want to get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how low is that value going to be?
That's
right?
The thing. Like, what's the, I always thought it was weird that they were talking about trading him. Like, why? Maybe they're worried he's an RFA, but that didn't make a ton of sense to me. Because I was like, yeah, if J.J. Paterka's on the market, go get him.
If he's still available, I would love that for the Vancouver Canucks.
Absolutely.
They need that, but like, if you're Buffalo, what's your incentive?
Yeah, why are you doing it? I don't know. I don't get that one. But it's Buffalo, so there's a lot I don't get about their situation sometimes. Okay, we'll take a break here. Jason Bukla will join us on the other side. We'll talk some NHL coaching openings with Bukes, playoffs, and of course, draft stuff with Jason as well. Keep sending your text in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sports. Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Randeep Janda here today. Randeep filling in for Drance for the next few days on the show. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. Jason Bukala is going to join us in just a second here, and we'll chat with Allison Lucan in the final segment of the show, but should have a chance to dip into the text inbox at some point before the end of the show as well. Just wanted to remind everyone once again that the Abbotsford Canucks are beginning their Calder Cup playoff run tonight. Home game against the Tucson Roadrunners, 7 o'clock start, I believe. And yeah, very exciting. You'll be able to catch the game right here on Sportsnet 650, including post-game coverage as well with Brandon Astle and Landon Ferraro. So big, exciting beginning to the Calder Cup playoffs for the Abbotsford Canucks tonight against the Tucson Roadrunners. And hey, if you're out in the Fraser Valley, you can check that one out in person as well. Okay, now joining us here on Canucks Talk, again from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, and a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he is Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
What's going on with you guys? Nice announcement today in Vancouver.
Yeah.
CWHL expansion. That's good to hear.
Very, very exciting. Lots of people fired up about that one. And I'm just excited, like, quick turnaround. They're going to start in 2025, 26. So very fast timeline to get that franchise up and running. But great news out here. And, you know, we're also still digesting and maybe some of us recovering from the surprise of so much of what we heard from Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin on Monday. And I shouldn't say surprise because it's Rutherford. We know he likes to be very open and very candid, but he gave us a lot to chew on. What was your reaction to everything you heard from Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin?
I probably reacted the same way you guys did. I do appreciate the honesty. You know, there's no real stone was left unturned there, in my opinion. It does leave me with a lot of questions that need significant questions that aren't going to be really easy to answer, but really I'm going to be keeping a close eye on what I'm hearing and how things kind of track out through. Well, I'm leaving for, I was just telling Lena, I'm leaving for U18 World Championships here on Friday in Dallas, and you know, obviously everybody's going to be there. There's a lot going on in the league. I'm going to be interested to see what the lay of the land is with the Canucks in the big picture, and obviously with the no trade kicking in on July 1st, and just a lot of things that the Canucks have to resolve, including the coach. I hope that announcement comes this week. I'm just curious to see what the plan looks like and how it looks like it's going to be coming together here, because it'll have an effect on, obviously, draft stock, draft grid, future asset management, money in the bank. There's a lot to unpack, guys.
Oh, there definitely is, and there's a lot of conversation in this city, Jason. But one of the areas, and I think it's kind of puzzling at the NHL level, but here we are, Elias Pettersson and his off-season workouts. There's been a lot of discussion about that. Obviously, last year it didn't go the way that the team wanted. Have you ever seen anything like this where it's just taking up so much airtime and just conversation where, you know, a star player is basically in a being called out for his maybe to be more of a complete player and have total buy-in heading into the next season?
I've been in the league now, you know, I've obviously outside of it as at the executive level since 2020, but it's not like I left the league because I just kind of pivoted into this new thing that we got going on. And so I'm dating myself over 20 years, and I got to tell you, I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I haven't seen anything like the amount of noise around a team from the drop of the puck in preseason almost, certainly the beginning of the year, right till the end. And you know, I've reflected upon that very first game of the year and how it looked like they were in control until they weren't. And then it was just a sign of the chaos that was going to be on the horizon with the Vancouver Canucks. And as far as your star player, I personally have benefited, I believe, from being around some really, really high-end athletes that are star players, the Barkovs, the Ekblads in Nashville. When I first started my career, you know, we had traded for and brought, or pardon me, signed in free agency, Paul Kariya, you know, the Timonens, the Pekkarinens, all these types of players. And their preparation was superlative. Like, it was always, you know, the, what was, what was best for the team in terms of my preparation. What do I learn from what I didn't do well last year, for example, or where do I have to tighten things up and get myself in better physical condition? Because I have to lead the group. I'm the best player on the team, and I have to be that type of lead by example person and athlete. And I've never seen anything like it, guys. It's disconcerting, to be honest with you. I don't think it's fair to the fan base. I think it's a huge letdown. I'm disappointed in just Patterson's preparation. And this hasn't just been this year, though. Like, let's be honest. Ever since he signed the contract, we've been having to have really hard discussions that we shouldn't have to have.
You mentioned Sasha Barkov there, and he's pretty much the gold standard when it comes to playing the complete game. But take us back to when he was younger. Was there somebody that kind of led him in that direction, or was he wired like that from day one?
He was always wired like that. I can take you back to that draft in New Jersey that year. The league was coming off a lockout year, and so the draft was a one-day extravaganza in New Jersey. And we had brought in that we were staying in Manhattan at the Westin there, Times Square, and going across. But we brought in McKinnon, who we knew wasn't going to fall to us because Patrick Waugh at that time had just been named Colorado's head coach and coming out of the Quebec League. That was a given. He was going to go number one overall. But we brought in the other ones too, you know, the Seth Jones, the Jonathan Durans, and then obviously Barkov. And there was a lot of noise around Duran, more Jones than Duran, but Barkov knocked it out of the park right away. Not only did he play at a high level in Liiga, which is a professional league in Finland, their top league, but he was a man. He was a boy who was already a man, and he was already a pro. And his preparation, and when he walked into the room, he had this presence, and he had a quiet presence about him. There's nothing loud about him to this day off the ice. He's a lead by example captain there in Florida. But he's a warrior, and he was always put together. Russian dad, Finnish mom. I don't know if the blend of that kind of fit into the pedigree there, but he has always been buttoned right up and been the ultimate pro, kind of like an Anze Kopitar in L.A.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with Patterson is there's kind of two parts of this, right? Where on the one hand, it's they need him to buy in and be that complete player and be that leader, even if it's just by example, right? No one's expecting him to be a guy who's getting up there and giving the big pregame speeches or anything like that. But the leader by example is something you need your highest paid player to be. But then there's also just the real kind of nitty gritty of, well, he needs to work out in the right way in the off season. He needs to put in the work in the gym and improve certain things and gain strength and all of that. From that perspective, like, what's reasonable to expect from a player over a summer? How much can he change his game, change his body over the course of one summer if he does, you know, have a big summer, as Rick Tocchet would say?
Well, you know, for me personally, it's just got to do with his approach between the years in everything that he does. So, yes, we can pinpoint the workout, and maybe he adds 5 pounds of muscle, maybe he adds 7 pounds of muscle, but it's the endurance and it's the lower half. I'll give you an example. Like, when we were at Sportsnet, we bring Connor Bedard in for, you know, his pre-draft interviews, and you know, he's from out there. I'm sure you guys have seen him maybe, you know, in the community, wherever you've seen him. But, like, Connor Bedard from the waist up is, he looks like he's 18 years old, but from the waist down, he figured it out how strong his core has to be, how his leg strength, you know, he's got the rear end of a horse, you know, these, like, he's really put together. And, you know, with Patterson, you know, he's lost a step somewhere along the line here. We can blame it on the knee, but let's make the adjustments and get better. You know, let's train the right way. What took so long to figure out how to train properly? Why would we train the incorrect way, I'm suggesting, if we were dealing with some sort of an injury that would hold us back in all areas of our game? And you have to put a lot of trust in him now that he's going to do the right thing. He's saying all the right things. Apparently he's doing the right things right now. That's fine. But, you know, for me, guys, you have to be really proud of what you do for your team and how you present to your team. And when you're making the kind of coin that this guy's making and you walk into that room, you have to know that your fellow teammates are looking across the room and they have an expectation. And the first one out of the box is, you better be in the best shape of your life because we need you to be the best version of yourself. And then the second thing they need to know is that on your hard days, your worst days, where you're not scoring goals and you're not, things just aren't bouncing your way, that you're going to do other things with your B game to lead us to victory in a different way. And that's a lot to unpack. And my trust level right now is at an all-time low for him.
Yeah, I think that's how a lot of people here feel as well, Books. We're talking to Jason Buchla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And of course, another big part of the conversation here in Vancouver is the future of Rick Tocchet. Jim Rutherford said they're not going to hold him to the option year for next year. So he had the balls in his court. He could potentially walk away from the Canucks and pursue other coaching opportunities. And you look around the league with some news this week. We've got now Seattle, the Rangers, Philly, Boston, Chicago, Anaheim as vacancies either totally open or at least with an interim head coach there right now. Which job jumps out to you as a potentially most attractive, not necessarily just for Tocchet, but for coaching candidates in general? Which market really stands out to you?
Well, one of the most attractive market that's going to be as soon as they start to spend a little bit more money, and they remind me kind of where we were in Florida, like Anaheim, the job in Anaheim is really attractive, yeah. Guys. They got a lot of great prospects on the horizon. It's going to take some spending to insulate them. They don't have enough of that yet. They've got the Killorns, you know, they got the Petranos, and you know, they, depending on what they do in goal with Gibson, that's kind of, he's becoming a two there. So that job on paper in terms of where you want to go in the next 3 years, I think is really attractive. If the coach, here's where I would be conflicted if I'm Rick Tocchet or any coach for that matter, is the shelf life is incredibly short, isn't it, with these guys anymore? Yep. And you can go from being the coach of the year and a year after that be out of a job. And so in that regard, let's call a spade, there's going to be some big dollars floating around out there. Obviously, I think that the Philadelphia Flyers would love to have a Rick Tocchet back in the fold. I think that they would be willing to pay him a big number. I think the New York Rangers, they're not going to get outbid necessarily, especially with this being Chris Drury's. He's got to get this right. So, you know, those are attractive from those types of perspectives. I don't know if they'd have the longevity. I don't, in my heart of heart, I hope that he doesn't leave Vancouver. As we were talking about it, Jay, over the last couple of years, like I was so enthusiastic about the culture and the direction and the structure. I hate like heck to see that the Canucks are going to have to go through a bunch of that all over again.
Looking at some of those other teams, you mentioned Anaheim there, which Jamie and I were talking about that earlier, and very high on that job as well, because they've got some pieces there. But moving over to Chicago, they've got Connor Bedard, who is, you know, one of the brightest talents, young talents in the NHL. As a talent evaluator, what else do they need to add there to make that a little bit more of attractive a job? Connor Bedard's great, but it feels like he's doing it all by himself.
Yeah, Listen, Artem Levshinov's going to be a hell of a player. Right shot D. They drafted him second overall last year. But, you know, I'm on record. I'm just going to keep, tooting my horn about it, that I think it was a huge miss for them last year. Think about what went really well for the Chicago Blackhawks back in the day. Back in the day, they went Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews. And then they, you know, on the back end, you know, the Seabrooks of the world and the Duncan Keiths of the world. And then they filled it out, in net after that. The thing for me is that Bedard doesn't have a running mate up front necessarily that can fit his style of trajectory and play. He doesn't have that winger, and that was a huge miss. Now they might win the lottery this year, and Matthew Schaefer is the best player on the board, guys. So, you know, in hindsight, if they win the lottery and they pick Schaefer this year, you know, I guess you're building it from the back end, but you could have had Bedard, Demidov, and Schaefer if the ping pong ball falls that way. I'm spitballing here, but I'm just saying from a team building perspective, that's how I would have built it out. And you know, that's what happened to us in Florida. You know, like we had Huberto already, and then we went to Barkov, and then we went to Ekblad, and we started going down the road that way, just kind of building through the middle. That was the way Dale Talon wanted to do it, and he's done a fabulous job. Talon's a builder. He did it in Chicago. He did it in Florida. And in the background right now, he's helping out in Vancouver. So they just Chicago is a curious team without an identity. And I will say this as well. Their leadership group outside of Foligno has been pretty pedestrian. Like Seth Jones was not a great leader there for the group to grow and push in the direction they needed to push in. So there's a lot going on there. They're still a ways away from being where they got to be. And that strikes fear in me when I'm trying to build around Bedard, because all of a sudden his entry level deal's done just like that. He got 3 years in the bank.
I do want to talk draft in a little bit with you here, Books, but before we get to the draft, we can touch on the Stanley Cup playoffs last night as well. And Ottawa, you know, climbs back from a 2-0 deficit in the game, then lose in overtime on Max Domi's goal. Now they're down 2-0 in the series. And, you know, Drake Batherson, understandably, in the crosshairs for criticism on that overtime goal. I think you could look at Dylan Cousins' play on that as well. Do you just kind of chalk it up to, look, those are the growing pains you expect from a young team getting their first taste of playoff action?
Yeah, I suppose you have to. I don't think you have any other choice. Like, on balance, guys, I truly believe that the Ottawa Senators were pretty close to coming out of there with two wins. They were closer. They were as close to two wins as they were two losses. And, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs made the decision, or have their strategy clearly, is that they're going to let this team, Ottawa, that is, you know, control play from the perimeter, and because there was long stretches that they controlled the play with the puck. And then, you know, it's almost like rope-a-dope. You wait for them to expose themselves and make that mistake. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, Batherson on two of the goals last night was out of position. Obviously, it's never a good idea to go backhand sauce in the middle of the ice when you're tracking up ice with the puck. And then, you know, Cousins overskates. The way Cousins tracked to defend Domi coming off the half wall, even before Domi gets to Batherson and goes through Batherson with the puck, both those guys, they're routes to defend speaks to their youth and speaks to the opportunity to coach them up so that it doesn't happen again. Is it going to happen again? Yeah, it is. It's going to happen a few more times before they get where they want to go. But for me personally, I'm looking at that team like they're playing heavy hard. They control the puck. I like the look of that group as a whole. I think they're very close to being a very good team, but there's going to be some growing pains here.
The late game, and I know you stayed up for that one, even though some of the folks out east probably did not with the Minnesota-Vegas game. Yeah. But, you know, that Minnesota team, and I have to admit, I was kind of maybe not the biggest fan heading into the playoffs, but we forget how good they were early on in the year. Can they make this a series against Vegas? I think a lot of folks are sleeping on that Minnesota team.
I agree. You know, they came back. They got healthy here at the end of the year. I slept on them too. Like I had Vegas, and this still may happen. I had Vegas in five. Okay. But honestly, talk about Minnesota. They could have walked out of there with two wins. Like the first game, you know, the goalie pulled and whatever else, they could have easily walked out of there with a couple of wins as well. So you look at Kaprizov coming back healthy, obviously huge, 2-1 last night, plays 20 minutes. Matt Boldy is really coming into his own. This Minnesota team are interesting. I think they're going to push Vegas. I don't think they win the series. Stranger things could happen. I don't think they win the series. But, again, they got some nice pieces signed to long-term deals there. And they're going to open up some money, I believe, to do some things in free agency here. So, and adding Beweem to the back end here for a playoff push. A lot of good things in Minnie. But they did surprise me last night with a 5-2 win.
All right, so let's dig into the draft for just a couple minutes here, Books. And, you know, barring a lottery miracle, the Canucks will be at least given the 15th pick. We'll see if they make it or not. They could easily trade that pick away, but they'll have the 15th pick in all likelihood here for the upcoming draft. And I know you've highlighted Ben Kindle before, local product, playing with the Calgary Hitmen. I think they've got a playoff game coming up tonight, a big game seven, the Calgary Hitmen. What makes him an enticing prospect in that 15 range if the Canucks are looking, if they're drafting there and, you know, potentially looking for a center?
Yeah, so you just hit it on the head, first of all. You know, he can play center and the wing. He's not, you know, his stature, he's not a really big, big guy, but he's got some Logan Stankoven in him, and he's also got some, not the total rat that Ridly Greig is for the Ottawa Senators, but in the fight, okay, eliminate some of the rap, but you understand what I mean by being in the fight all the time. And I think that when you start, depending on what the Canucks end up doing at the top of the table long term, you know, in the one hole, when Ben Kindle arrives, he will be that guy, that middle six or second line guy that stirs the drink, plays the game the right way, and you're never going to have to wind him up. That's my one takeaway from the Canucks season this year, and we're still talking about it with Pettersson, is that you're not going to have to get this guy to ever start on time. So my target at the top of the table, if possible, is like the Brady Martin kid, who's now gone to play for Team Canada at the World. So I'll stay tuned on that. I'll circle back with you guys. But guys that are going to stir the drink, provide better than secondary scoring and offense, but play the game the right way in all three zones. and be hard outs every night. Because on your worst nights, that's my one thing with what went on this year, on the hard nights, the Bessers, the Pettersons, some of these guys up front, they just didn't bring enough on the hard nights. And so that extra layer that starts to come again, kind of like Pettersson on the back end, you know, you saw it, right? You can see what he's going to be like. That's the kind of attitude I want to see integrated into the futures here with the Canucks.
Books, you mentioned you're heading to cover the U18 Worlds down in Texas. Who are you excited to watch down there?
I'm waiting on Anton Frondell to get released from Djurgården overseas because he's my biggest mover and shaker. Misa is not there for Team Canada. I'm still waiting to see if another potential Canucks target, Joe Nesbitt from the Windsor Spitfires, they just lost in Game 7 to the Kitchener Rangers. It's a tough pill to swallow. They were up 3-0, and Kitchener came all the way back. But I'm interested to take a look at him. And there's a couple of kids that went to college. Team USA doesn't generally, if a team or a kid leaves a program, they don't generally bring them back for this tournament. But Cullen Potter from the Arizona State, and also oh my gosh, from the Detroit Red Wings, his son at Michigan. It's passing me by right now, but I'm interested to see the college guys come back a level and see how they play as well here. So another name to keep an eye on, though, guys, is Radim Mirka, who played right down there in Seattle for the Thunderbirds. Curious to see where he goes in the draft, and that could be something that, you know, the Canucks might have interest in as well. That 6'6", 210-pound defenseman who can provide offense, but he's got that presence physically.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Nesbitt, right? Because you just see the profile, 6'4", and, you know, point per game basically in the OHL, and that feels like somebody is going to step up and call his name pretty early when you're talking about those tools down the middle.
Yeah, Jack's, I might even call him Joe there for a second.
That's all right. Jack's got, that's all right.
Yeah, Jack Nesbitt is, he fits a lot of what that mid-range. I think he's got way more power on the horizon, too. Like, he's still pretty light at about around 185 pounds. So this is a guy that when he gets to be a man, he's going to be like 215. Those 6'4", 215 guys who produce offense, kill penalties, you know, on their hard outs in all three zones, boy, oh boy, they're worth their weight in gold.
Books, always a pleasure, man. Great stuff as always. We will chat again next week.
Looking forward to it, boys. I'll talk to you from Dallas. I'll give the updates.
Very exciting. Thanks. That is Jason Bukla from Sportsnet, of course, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, en route to Dallas to cover the U18 Worlds. A wealth of knowledge.
Okay, so he mentioned Radim Mirka of the T-Birds in the WHL. This guy skates like the wind at 6'6". Just watched him a couple of months ago.
Scouting report.
I'm telling you, if you can find clips of this guy, I know it's the WHL, but he's going to play against other 17-year-olds. It's pretty amazing how big he is and how smoothly he can skate. So definitely one to watch.
I'm all in on Ben Kindle. Like the Logan Stankoven comps out of Coquitlam. Let's go. Let's do the local prospect thing.
Undersized or oversized? You go Mirka or Kindle. Doesn't matter. One of those two, Vancouver.
Either the very extreme end of the spectrum.
It's
going
to be the Richo Charo photo. All right? That's what it's going to be. One of those two guys.
When you put it that way, you want the Chara in the photo. Okay, you don't want the Richo in the Richo Chara photo. Okay, we'll take a break. Allison Lucan, of course, the Seattle Kraken making news. Dan Bylsma out, reorganizing the front office. What's next for them? And we'll chat with Allison as well about some of her early impressions from the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Randeep Janda. Here we are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And send your texts in here. Final segment of the show. We're going to chat with Allison Lucan in just a second, but lots still to get into, whether it's Canucks, Rick Tocchet's future, Elias Pettersson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You guys know all the hot topics. We're all on the same page here, right? We all know what's going on.
We're all waiting.
We're all waiting. We are waiting to hear what happens next for the Vancouver Canucks, as usual. And maybe we can talk a little Stanley Cup playoffs with Allison as well. And now joining us, as mentioned, covering the Seattle Kraken, one of our favorites here on the show, she is Allison Lucan. Allison, thanks for doing this. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. You know, nothing's going on. Low key yes. off season, yeah. pretty quiet.
Very,
so
for both,
you know,
cities,
I'm like
very
Durant,
quiet.
I'm putting in the hours.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's right. He took off. I don't know what he's thinking, but yeah, as you said, very busy couple of days for the Seattle Kraken. First with the news that they let go Dan Bylsma as head coach, and then of course the reorganization of the front office. So Ron Francis, president of hockey operations, now Jason Botterill takes over as the general manager, and they spoke to the media yesterday in Seattle. So now, having had some time to digest with the news and hearing what they had to say about it, well, what are kind of your big picture takeaways about what this all means for the Kraken?
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely interesting, right? I think the knee-jerk reaction of hockey is to go, whoa, this is chaos. But it's now kind of starting to fall in line for me of the logic we've started to say more and more of, you can't be mad at a player when he speaks his mind, because we always, you know, ditch on them for being so vanilla. This is a team that doesn't like what happened this past year, so they're willing to maybe make an unpopular change, and a lot of them, to get back in the winning column. And I thought it was a pretty big statement. That was a theme coming from ownership and Ron Francis and Jason Botterill yesterday, is basically they're looking to do what it takes to try and become a perennial playoff team. That's the goal. And, you know, Botts basically did point to, he said, this year's Kraken wasn't as good defensively as they've been in the past. That was usually a hallmark of this group, regardless of where they were in the standings. They couldn't win a back-to-back game once this season, and going back into last season. And, you know, maybe they weren't playing with the speed that was anticipated given some of the talent that they do have on the roster. So interesting times for sure. And we'll see how this plays out. The coaching search is obviously going to be front of mind, which I'm sure you guys know well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And when you talk about coaching, though, and let's dip into that topic a little bit. They had Dave Hakstol before, obviously had some NHL experience, but still relatively young in his coaching career when he took the Seattle job. Dan Bylsma had been around a long time, cup-winning coach. What kind of coach do the Kraken need right now, though?
Yeah, you know, and Jason Botterill was asked this yesterday, time is a flat circle. And he said, you know, they want someone who doesn't feel fear from seeing a lot of coaching changes. They want someone who's excited about the opportunity of what the Kraken can present to a coach. They obviously want someone who identifies with, you know, putting in structure for this group. As I said, reinvigorating that playing with speed mentality, and someone who's willing to leverage all the tools of the organization to put together the right lineup, while also giving the kids room to grow. That's the great white hope for this organization, is a lot of the youth. And so they want a coach who can have that structure, but also not be so rigid that, you know, a Shane Wright or a Yanni Newman, should he make the team next year, and ultimately perhaps a Berkeley Catton in the next year or so, isn't, you know, stapled to the bench at high risk times, or not given the minutes they might need to grow.
Now, I do have to be honest. I saw, I think from you, actually, you tweeted a quote from Jason Botterill on, and it came onto my Twitter feed, and it was specifically calling out the need for structure, and my antenna went up. I don't know if you were aware of this, but that was a major, major buzzword around the hiring of Rick Tocchet. Like, I can't even tell you the amount of time we spent talking about structure during the transition from Boudreaux to Rick Tocchet. If Tocchet becomes available, like, is that just, am I right to read anything into that? Would he be a person of interest for the Seattle Kraken if he became a coaching free agent?
Well, you know, Botterill and Francis are certainly not telling me their plans, but we know that, you know, that Tocchet was one of the rumored coaches to be considered when Ron Francis made his first hire. You know, it's interesting. I've started to kind of look at who's available out there, and these are my thoughts only, not right. The organization's, but you have to talk to them, right? I mean, because I think that this is a group that at this point and time does need an experienced NHL coach. This isn't a time to bring in a first time or a fairly young NHL coach, in my opinion. So if you look at who's available right now, I think you'd be foolish to not think that he's on the short list. But as you guys have all been talking about on the show and on the channel, is the cards are in Tkachuk's hands right now. Where does he want to go? What does he see as the right fit? And does he say yes to having those conversations?
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because I look at the Seattle opening here, and, you know, look, this is always important to keep in mind with an NHL head coaching job. They're so hard to get that ultimately, if you want to coach in the NHL, sometimes you just have to take whatever job is out there and available to you. But I do look around the league, and, you know, there's some jobs in high-profile markets, right? You think about the Rangers or the Bruins or Chicago, like with a chance to coach Connor Bedard, you know, Anaheim with the weather and the lifestyle and all that. Again, I understand, you know, Ron Francis and Jason Botterill aren't sharing how they'll be pitching coaches with you, but if you were in charge, if you were doing it, like, how would you pitch a coach on coming to be the next head coach of the Seattle Kraken?
Yeah, and I heard Halford and Brough basically dropping us from their consideration this morning. But, you know, I think that we heard some of those comments yesterday, and I alluded to some of them. I think that, you know, for people who've had the opportunity to see the facilities that the Kraken have put in place, they really are top notch. And that's just not my opinion. I've heard that from people from other organizations when they come through. I mean, you guys know you're mired in looking for a simple practice facility, right? And how important that can be. So I think the resources, both physical and intellectual, are huge. You have ownership that is all in. You can see the contracts they've been willing to sign, the free agents they've been willing to go after and offer. So I think, you know, and you have an organization, you know, obviously two original six looking potentially for new coaches, but sometimes there's opportunity and a lack of history, right? So do you want to be part of having still a fairly blank slate and not having to work with legacy hires and legacy decision making and legacy strategy? So you get to be part of building something new without a lot of the harnesses that might come with a longer standing franchise. And then finally, if the youth entices you, you know, there are some nice pieces in the pipeline, and I think that could be exciting for a coach to help mold those players into the best years of their career.
Here in Vancouver, we've drawn up a list, and management has as well. They've outlined that top six, the center position, is the priority. For Jason Botterill taking the GM job here, what's his priority for this roster? What does he need more of? What does he need to address?
Yeah, and he was, as we all know, every team could never have too many centers, right? And so he was actually asked that as well. I think they would love to have more centers, but I don't know that that is necessarily top priority. I think that while underlying numbers don't paint it favorably, Chandler Stephenson has done what he needed to do to help Matty Beniers and Shane Wright take steps. Ironically, we don't see these in the public numbers, right? But Chandler Stephenson was the number one pass completer in the league among all NHL forwards last year, which is wild to me. So centers, I think they're pretty good. I think that they like their defense. They want more speed. And I think, you know, one thing that Botterill said he's looking for is skill upgrades. This team, and these are his words, is not just one player away from cup contention. They know that. So if there is a free agent out there or a trade out there, they are open and honest that they have the capital, both in terms of cap space and also draft picks, to go after a player that makes sense in their system. If it can give them an upgrade forward-wise or defense and goaltending, we're unclear if they'll need to make a change back there as well.
In conversation with Allison Lucan here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And Allison, moving beyond the Seattle Kraken a little bit, you know, still very early stages of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think we'll get our first game three so far tonight between Dallas and Colorado. So, you know, still very small sample size, but just looking around the league at the series so far, what's kind of caught your attention or captured your curiosity so far?
Yeah, you know, I think there's been, I mean, we always love to watch the playoffs. I think, you know, I would love to see Ottawa come back with a counterpunch. That series hasn't been maybe what we all hoped for, and you can see kind of the first-year jitters with that group coming through. Having said that, my early read right now is that, you know, it's going to be whoever comes out of the Atlantic that's in the final. But, you know, you've got Toronto looking sharp. Florida and Tampa Bay was not what I was expecting. Tampa Bay was my pick to get to the final, and that was not necessarily what I saw last night. And I think also I'm very intrigued. These are the obvious picks, right? But the Dallas-Colorado match, we know Dallas is just really consumed with injuries right now, but they haven't looked like the team that I thought they would be in this postseason. And finally, I would say, if the Kings can pull it off and knock off Edmonton, I mean, just the drama for days is going to be delicious.
Well, I did want to hit you on the Toronto Maple Leafs because it's an unpopular opinion out on this coast, but I think this might be the best chance for them to make a cup final based on the mix that they have in the goaltending department defensively and, of course, the high end. Them against the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers, if they get past Ottawa, like, is there a path for this team to at least get to the Eastern Conference Final? I feel like it's their best shot.
Oh, 100%. And I think, you know, and people are talking about this. This is not an original thought, but we're seeing them get some monkeys off their back early, right?
Yeah.
They're getting power play success. They're getting goaltending. So I think that I agree. And, you know, hopefully Florida, and for all of our benefit, Florida and Tampa ends up being what we hoped it would be, which means that's going to take a lot out of whoever comes out of that series, right? So the way it looks right now, all of one game in for Florida and two games in for Toronto is, you know, I agree, Randy. But I think that this could definitely be Toronto's best chance in a long, long time.
I hear that and I understand it. And you can look at, you know, their solidity on the blue line. And as you said, scoring on the power play. And I don't know if I can put my finger on it, but there's just something about the Leafs this year that kind of leave me cold, that leave me wanting more. And maybe it's because Austin Matthews wasn't at the top of his game this year because, you know, look, I can see again intellectually what everyone is talking about. But like, do you know what I'm getting at a little bit? I feel like there's just I see a separation from the Leafs to the teams that I would look at as kind of the true, you know, top four or five Stanley Cup contenders. And maybe that's just like my unfair personal bias because they've fallen short so many times, but I'm still waiting to see it, to see that like true high-end contender top gear from the Leafs.
No, it's kind of like, you know, when you have a puppy and the dog turns two and all of a sudden it calms down, right? It's kind of kind of that feeling. They've been so exciting for so long in different ways. And, you know, obviously Austin Matthews isn't putting up the points, misses all those games due to injury. So I totally understand the vibe. And also it's the Leafs, right? This is what happens. It's the Leafs. But, you know, Florida surprised me in a good way last night. You know, you see Tkachuk come back and not just score once, but a couple times. And so that's a team that looks like a cup contender, right? In fact, even though I have the Lightning in the final, Florida has looked better to me all year when I think of cup contention style play. But I do understand what you're saying with Toronto. It might just be that we're so used to Toronto being, you know, flashy and bright and shiny and crazy and exciting that this perhaps, dare I say, more mature, more balanced play looks and feels different. And we're not sure if it's for real or if it's going to be the ultimate path to success just yet.
They're up 2-0 in their series, couple of close victories for the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, it seems like even though they won the President's Trophy, they do remain kind of on the outside of the conversation so often, even when we're talking about best teams in the league. But up 2-0 in the series, are you buying them or how much are you buying them? I think we all have them as cup contenders, but where's your confidence level in the Jets right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we all know the narrative there too, right, is Hellebuck, and he started to look like he's, again, getting more confidence and seeing that maybe he can right that ship. It's crazy to me. I really didn't watch a ton of Winnipeg until last season. You know, you follow them, but not intently. And they just fly under the radar continually. And it's wild. You know, I love their forward group. I love their top pair on the back end. And I think that might benefit them. And you want to see it for that fan base. I know that maybe in Canada you don't, but I would love to see them get that success. And I like, again, the balance and strength in all three parts of their roster, net, defense, forward group. I like how they're built.
Allison, always really appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us, and should be a very interesting off season for the Seattle Kraken. Maybe we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Always whenever you need me, guys. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. That is Allison Lucan covering the Seattle Kraken and weighing in on the Stanley Cup playoffs as well. And I did have to laugh because Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texted and Allison's the best. I want to take this Kraken coaching job right now. And she said Halford and Brough were writing it off, and we were too. And I was like, you know what? She makes a good point. Not beholden to the past. Come in with a blank slate. Write your own chapter. It's like, that's a good point.
The elevator pitch was a good one.
It was a good one. I was like, this is a good pitch.
They're still on the bottom of my rankings, but it was a good elevator pitch.
I respect the effort. It was a good pitch.
You might get a long runway there, but do you have the high end?
Yeah.
Anaheim, you get a long runway, and you potentially have the high-end talent.
Yes.
Seattle, I don't see it yet.
All right. So you brought up, hey, Leafs potential, this could be their best shot. Am I crazy for having this skepticism still? Like, is it just built in Leafs hate? Because this is such a cliche, a dumb sports talk radio cliche, but like, what's their identity? You know what I mean? Like, what can they hang their hat on that separates them from other teams and that from other really good teams? Like, they're a good team, obviously. And it should be like Austin Matthews. We've got Austin Matthews. We've got a game breaker. He's not really that this year. That's not his fault. Injuries and all that. But he hasn't really been that this year. Obviously, they've got the high-end talent still in Marner and Nylander and Tavares. There's something where I can't quite get on board with them taking down one of the true heavyweights in the NHL.
Okay, so against Tampa, they've had pretty good success this year, right? Regular season versus playoffs, I understand, is a different ballgame. Florida, smash mouth hockey, but they're really, really good. They've always got their foot on the gas pedal. You know, they got the green light to forecheck you to death. But I feel like Toronto's built better to play against the Florida this year. They've got Chris Tanev makes a huge difference on that team, right? Oliver Ekman-Larsson in this form, he's turned it around a little bit. So I think on balance, Stolarz has been rock solid. He hasn't had a lull this season. Defensively, they're better. And the forward group, I think your point about Austin Matthews is right, but they've got multiple game breakers there. They've got Mitch Marner, who after the Four Nations faceoff is a different player.
Mm-hmm.
He needed that jolt. He got it. William Nylander over the last 2 years has been their best player.
Mm-hmm.
And they've added size in not necessarily a player acquisition, but Matthew Nyes is maturing in front of our eyes. So
Nyes makes a big difference.
So to Allison's point, are they maturing? Yes. Berube has kind of he's put guys in the doghouse, but he's not afraid to take them out immediately. So it's kind of the carrot and stick combination.
Yeah.
I'm going to smack you, but I'm going to
give you a carrot.
I'm going to dangle the carrot in front of you too, right? Trust me, as a West Coast guy, it pains me to say this because I have grown up being we all anti-Toronto to a certain extent. But they seem a little mature. And the comparison I'll make is, and it's not the exact same one because they're two very different teams. But remember, when Barry Trotz went to Washington, the team became more mature. They had the high end, but they weren't the Mike Green, Alexander Ovechkin teams. They kind of settled down a bit. And I feel with Toronto, to Allison's point, they've kind of done that as well. The high end is there. Austin Matthews is not clicking at his usual level, but it feels like they're kind of even keel. And they know that they can win a couple of different ways. They need good goaltending. They need a rock-solid back end. But it just feels like a more mature team this year.
Yeah. I'm just not buying it. I don't know why. And again, do I have a good reason? No, probably not. But there we go.
They're not the favorites. Are they in the mix for me?
I will say one tangible reason to be skeptical. What are they, 4-for-4 on the power play? And a grand total of 40 seconds basically spent on the power play? That's not going to last. Right. Eventually your power play is going to cool off and you're going to have to find a way to generate more at 5-on-5. And it's kind of been hard to, I know somebody texted in, Leafs have been getting dominated 5-on-5. That's true. It's also, there's a score effects thing, right? Where they go up and then so they play the defensive shell. So we haven't really had a chance to see what a long stretch of a close 5-on-5 game looks like between Ottawa and Toronto. But that's where my question marks rely on. It's great. You got the 5-forward power play thing and you're on fire right now. And Linus Allmark has had some problems. And so you've been able to build these big leads and then sit on them. When the power plays dry up, when you go cold on the power play, or you're just not getting the calls and you have to find a way to score, I'm a little skeptical about them being able to do it in those situations.
To their credit, though, the second half of the season, the first half of the season, their power play was not good. Mark Savard made some changes, and they've gotten better. One area that they are better this year compared to last year, though, is rush defense. And a big part of that is Chris Tanev. A big part of that is having just players that you have more faith in. And in the playoffs, we saw that in the Vegas game last night. Minnesota shredded them in off the rush. Even Vegas had pressure early, but that 1-0 goal just absolutely killed the game for Vegas, where they thought they had momentum. If you're able to defend off the rush, that just takes away a bunch of opportunities. So I think Toronto's better than they have been. Now the question is that going to be good enough against Tampa and Florida, whoever you face, if they get past the Ottawa Senators?
Which they probably will.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I feel bad for Travis Green, but it doesn't look great.
I do too, because he easily could have at least had a split in those games, but it is what it is. That's how the Stanley Cup playoffs go. We talked a little bit about Oilers Kings earlier. You're all eyes on Kuzmenko. I'm watching Stuart Skinner in that one. Habs Caps. I mean, I I think it's going to be the Caps. Like, I don't, Habs, nice plucky story, but I think the Caps are going to take care of business. Stars, Avalanche. They managed to even it up, but it's going back to Colorado now. I have the Avalanche, I think, as my Stanley Cup pick.
Okay.
Are you, like, do you see Dallas being able to hang in that series even with their injuries?
I think ultimately I have Colorado winning in that series. I still think the way that they play, the speed that they're able to hit, there will be a bit of a boost with the Landeskog news whenever, you know, we start to see that perk a little bit. That gives the
team. It should be tonight.
Yeah. Based on the way he was activated, he didn't play the last game, but it seems like it's trending in the next game or two. And those injuries just absolutely kill Dallas, right? When you don't have Haskinen to begin with, Jason Robertson, those are two premier pieces. And the way that Colorado's been able to build depth after that Rantanen deal, it shows you that, hey, the overall, you know, the sum of the parts, that's what they needed. They needed that depth. And Jamie, let's be honest, Rantanen has not hit in Dallas yet. Obviously, it's taking him a little bit longer to get going. As of right now, I think Colorado is the team to beat there. I still think it goes 6 or 7, though.
Yeah.
Like, Dallas has got enough punching power to stay in this series. I think, but in my opinion, they're definitely the underdogs.
All right, that's the show. As a reminder, playoff hockey for the Abbotsford Canucks. Their Calder Cup playoff run gets going tonight, 7 p.m. at the Abbotsford Center against the Tucson Roadrunners. First of a best of three series with all games in Abbotsford. And you'll be able to listen right here on the station. We'll be back tomorrow for more Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.